Welcome to episode 83 of the Comfort Monk Podcast. My guest on the show today is Nathan Price. Nathan is a musician who plays bass in the band Jenny Besetzt, who just put out a new record called Goner, probably my favorite release of theirs. Nathan plays in a few other bands as well that we talk about on the show. But Nathan also helps organize Hopscotch Music Festival. The lineup for that festival is particularly awesome this year, so I was very excited to pick his brain about just the ins and outs of organizing something that ambitious. Just played a show with Nathan here in Columbia at Colatown Bike Collective. It was very fun getting to know him a little better through this podcast. Super nice guy, and I think it made for a great episode. So here's our episode with Nathan Price. Pretty cool gear on the wall behind you.
Sort of. It looks better than it is.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Well, thanks for getting together this morning and chatting for the podcast, dude.
Yeah, totally.
I guess for the people listening, I'll clarify that Nathan here plays in a band called Jenny Besetzt, and we played a show together this past weekend. They're from Raleigh, North Carolina, and touring with Quad from Charlotte. How was the rest of the tour, man? Where'd you guys go after Columbia?
It was real fun. The Quad crew were sweeties. We had a blast. We went to Boone right after that at Lily's, which is owned by Seth that used to play with Naked Gods. I don't know if you remember them.
Yes, I definitely did.
We had a great time. His new band, Seth's new band, played. It was amazing. He played solo the songs that will eventually become a new band. And we had a real good time. Yeah, the whole tour was really fun, actually. We had a blast in Columbia.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, Naked Gods, Thomas from Quad / Yardwork and all sorts of bands. I feel like he's been linked up with the Naked Gods crew since as long as I can remember. Yardwork used to play with them all the time, right?
Yeah, I found that out in Boone that they were like maybe freshman roommates at App or something like that. Like Seth and Thomas, they're like old friends.
Yeah, that adds up. I forget that Thomas went to school up there and kind of had a whole musical journey before the Yardwork days too.
Yeah, that's right.
So I got turned on to him and his music like in high school. One of my bands played a bunch of shows with the Yardwork and kind of buddied up with him and Bo, and later on Bo went on to record like the first couple Blanca records too. So like,
oh nice, I didn't realize that.
Definitely got some deep connections to that crew.
Man, I loved Yardwork so much. That was such a good band, and when I would see him live, it was just crazy for being like that age of just like seeing people just really getting it right. It ruled.
Yeah, I would argue still in the running for my favorite, at least favorite Charlotte band, but in the running for favorite North Carolina band, period.
Yeah, they were great.
Every once in a while, they'll get together and do a little snug show or something, so not completely impossible to catch them.
Yeah, I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, I think they did like maybe a year ago or something like that. It's pretty rare. I feel like once every few years, they get a wild hair to get together and just play. I don't know if I could see him doing like new music necessarily, but
well, they all got so much maybe stuff, seems like it'd be hard.
Yeah, but then at the same time they all seem to be so close still that I could see him maybe just doing it if the songs were there. I think it would probably take Thomas coming to the table with some songs to do it, just because I don't know, I always kind of got the feeling, even though Bo sang a lot, I always felt like Thomas was maybe sing a few more songs than Bo in that project. Maybe Bo kind of liked it that way, but could be wrong. But yep, great bands of North Carolina past, man. Well, dude, and I've been listening to the new Jenny Bissett's record a ton, and I mean, I feel like every record you guys do is just like you're striking gold, but this one, something about it just hits like extra hard for me. I feel like there's like, it's got this like undercurrent, this like sort of dark, ominous undercurrent to it, but in a way, which is so funny because I feel like the guys in the band are like not at all and like dark natured, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
This project sound is always like, it has such a like beautiful, rich, and like kind of dark and mysterious energy to it, but then the guys are just like as affable and approachable as possible, which is a kind of cool juxtaposition. But so how, like, are these songs ones you guys were sitting on for a while, or are they somewhat fresh? What's kind of the story behind this batch of songs?
They're, well, at this point they're all kind of not that fresh, because we finished this album like it was mastered during COVID. Like, it basically, we finished it and mixed it like right before COVID hit, and then I think we mastered it during COVID. I might have that a little wrong, but it was sometime in early 2020 we finished this stuff, and then we were like, started to look around to places, and nobody was like really doing anything new at that point, like when we were sending it around to like different people to put it out maybe. So then we were thinking maybe we would just put it out ourselves and just see what happened, but then we realized that if we were to do that, we really wanted to play a big, like some kind of release show type thing. So we just kind of ended up sitting on it, and I think that it just kind of, you know, we all are also in other bands and stuff like that, and you kind of get sucked away to other projects and other things. And then finally, it kind of, we were like, okay, we have to do this now. And we started sending it around, and it got a much better response now that everybody's kind of back. It's not so locked down on everything. So it felt like it was time. And so some of the songs, none of them are like super fresh for us right now. Like, we definitely have a lot of newer songs, but also, some of them are even before I was in the band, where John just kind of like had almost like a fully finished demo. Like Night Terrors specifically was one that John kind of had done, and it like didn't quite make it on any of the other records for what, like, I think that maybe he wrote it right after the first record and felt like it didn't quite fit on the second record, and was thinking about releasing it as like a 7-inch, like sort of like the demo style 7-inch. And then we decided that we had to get it on this record. So it's everything from pretty new ones for the, we either, about half of them we did as we were making the record, and then half of them John kind of had locked and loaded, written. And me and Thomas just kind of helped flesh them out.
So I guess, what point in the band's like discography did you pop in? Were you around like the second album?
I was not on the second album. I joined the band before the second album came out.
Okay. I was going to say, cause I remember when that came out, I'm pretty sure I'd seen you playing with them. So yeah, you hopped in as like a live fixture right after that.
Yeah, basically I kind of, Thomas that plays drums now was playing bass actually.
What? I did not remember that.
It was not a lineup of the band that toured a ton, but it was like, so Thomas was playing bass, and then John was playing keys and guitar. And he would switch back and forth as he was singing, and Hunter that played in Bronze Chorus and stuff like that was on drums. And then everybody lived in the Triangle except for Hunter, who was in Greensboro still. So then it just kind of didn't work out. Brad was still in Greensboro, so it was like half and half, but then everything kind of shifted around and became more of a Triangle band, and nobody wanted to drive 2 hours for practice every time. So
fair enough.
We kind of started shifting around, and I've known those dudes for forever. A band I used to be in called Nest played with them at the old Pinhook, where like the stage was like the other way around. And that was the first time I saw them. And I think that maybe they, like, John was, somebody had an acoustic guitar in that band. I don't remember who it was. Maybe I'm remembering this totally wrong, but it was like a little bit of a different thing. It was closer to maybe I'm blanking on who I'm trying to. It's like it was more like Wild Nothing or something like that, you know. Okay. Like it was kind of cool, but then it got, you know, it's got a little darker over time.
I like that Jenny Bassett's scratch is like a sort of like Manchester itch that I don't really get from anything in the Southeast. I mean, maybe our friend, there's a band that you might know them as well, but from up in Greenville called Glass, that I think is like, oh, yeah, they have some kind of like post-punky Manchester vibe, but a very, very different style of that than Jenny Bassett's. But yeah, I mean, it's just like a something that I listen, that style of music is like very up my alley, but there's just not a lot that scratches that itch around here.
It's weird. You know? Yeah, we always felt that kind of like a lot, because we would always, sometimes we do better in other cities, not in the Southeast, but we love playing the Southeast the most. So it's like, it's kind of tough, because it'll be like, we really feel it when we're like on a bill with like a bunch of really cool, like more like garage rocky, catchy, hooky things. Mm-hmm. And then we're the only one that are like playing real exacting post-punky shoegazy type things, you know, and you're like, man, we feel like the odd man out a little bit. But sometimes when we're in other cities, like maybe like Baltimore or like up north or somewhere in the Midwest, then you can kind of feel like there's a lot more of that type of stuff around.
Well, from my experience, every time that you guys have played like Columbia or even like when we played together up in Durham, like the quality that you're saying makes you feel like the album's out, I think is also what makes you the memorable act of the night. Like every time I've played with you guys, I'm always hearing people who are like, weren't expecting that sound. They might have expected a third kind of garagey whatever thing to be on the bill, but then there's like, you're a nice curveball. And I feel like despite being like pretty ambitious and like adventurous with the song structures and all, they're still very palatable, you know, like it's kind of a nice little niche that you guys fall into in regards to that.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
So are you guys planning on hitting the road a little bit more this year, or is it kind of like, sure, you got a lot going on your end?
Yeah, we're kind of, this year might be tough. We're trying to set something else up for later in the year. I'd love to get back and do an opening slot like we've done a few times with some other people. Yeah,
that's game changer.
Yeah, that's always real fun. And you just get in front of so many people and sell so many records. But it's tough because I've got Hopscotch, obviously. And then everybody's got like real jobs now that it's sort of harder than it used to be. Spence is like a full-time roaster at Counterculture. He roasts like everybody's coffee on the East Coast. And then, you know, everybody's got a bunch of stuff. So, but hopefully we can get back out there. We have like one of the songs I think is going to be in an episode of Sex in the City later, strangely.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so once that makes us TikTok famous or something, then we'll figure out where we go from there. But
yeah, I mean, hopefully you guys are just making a cameo in the following episode. It's always been a dream of mine, you know, like there'll be like a random like prom scene or something where there's a band playing, but they're like an actual band that's just like acting in this episode of a show.
You got to get like in with the Gemstones crew, right? That's South Carolina. Like, you got to.
Oh, dude, that would be sick.
They have that shit all the time.
Yeah, I don't know why that's like a really like specific thing that I would love to do as a band. Have like a cameo as a fake band in a show or movie.
Because it would fucking rip. That'd be great.
It's sort of a lost art that used to happen like all the time, man. Like, I feel like all sorts of shows, you would see something like that pop up.
Well, now everybody just has a DJ in real life, so they just do it in the TV show too.
True, true. Yep. It's more cost efficient that way, I suppose. So you said that there's a bunch of new Jenny Bassett stuff too. Are y'all thinking of like trying to squeeze in some studio time and knocking out something new?
I think that, well, so this record, it was basically me, John, and Thomas that recorded everything. And it was kind of Sarah that used to be in the band. She moved away. She's on the coast now. And then Spencer, who plays guitar, was playing keys and guitar for a little bit before Dylan joined. And so we, while we were recording the record, it was really just me, John, and Thomas doing everything. And I think that we kind of got a little, I mean, we were adding like all kinds of shit, you know, it's just like you really get like sucked into it. And I think for the next one, we're thinking about maybe doing it a little bit more straightforward, like not live, but like more maybe even recording to tape again or doing something like that, like a little bit, you know, you kind of just, it's fun to go like real crazy and add a bunch of sounds and layers and everything else, but then also you kind of like want to do it both ways. So I think we might try to learn all the songs and tour them a little bit and then go in and try to like record in like a weekend or two.
Cool. Where did you record Goner at? Was that like a home studio or were you in somebody's space?
We recorded some of it at Fidelatorium with Missy.
Okay.
And then I had a space behind Nice Price Books in Raleigh on Hillsborough. We had like a, it's like really a storage space, but we kind of like decked it out like a recording studio. And we recorded a lot of it there at a, we used to call it Dabby Road Studios, but, and Allie, Spencer's wife, recorded some of that stuff at, right there behind Nice Price. And then a lot of it was done just at our houses and stuff.
Nice. Yeah. So just sort of hodgepodge all over the place.
Yeah. A little bit. I mean, we try to do all of the drums and all of the vocals at a studio because, you know, those are the,
consistent. Yeah.
Yeah. And then everything else we felt like we could kind of get close enough and then do it, fix it in the mix.
Nice. So, I guess when you were recording the tape in the past, I mean, have you done that multiple times or was that one specific record of yours?
Actually, me and John have done that before. We have not done it with Jenny, I should say that.
Okay, got
We've done it with other bands, and but I do like it. I've got a 388, and then we also have access to a couple other tape machines. I got like a Fostex reel-to-reel, too, that I haven't used in like literally like 4 years. But the 388, I use a lot. We're currently recording like a country record. Me and Spencer and Dylan are in a country band with Brian from Lonnie Walker. I don't know if you remember Lonnie Walker.
Yeah, definitely.
And Spencer plays drums in that one instead of guitar. And Dylan, who plays keys, and Jenny plays lap slide. He's pretty good at steel player.
So does that project have a name yet?
Paradise Motel Lounge is the name of that one.
Nice. Okay. I think I saw like a on your Venmo avatar.
Oh, that is my Venmo. Yeah, that's right. Because we've been doing these like monthly shows where you just like Venmo whatever. So, and we're trying they're called the Country Club. And, so we're going to be doing some more of that. And we've been recording that to tape and just kind of having so much fun recording to tape. We kind of want to do some Jenny stuff. John's a little bit of a harder sell on that because he likes to have it pristine, but also he kind of, a lot of his favorite things are more like lo-fi side of the world. So I feel like he'll really enjoy it.
It might be kind of cool seeing what becomes of getting him out of his comfort zone a little bit in that regard, you know, like it could be,
I think
shake it up in a good way, you know?
Yeah.
I think the only time we ever recorded to tape was in Durham with Scott Salter. I don't even know what he calls his studio space, but he's like, you ever heard of that guy before?
I don't know if I have, actually. It was in Durham.
He recorded like, I'm trying to think of some of the bigger, more recognized. He recorded, he had a lot to do with, I think, Actor by St. Vincent. And then he did a lot of Spoon recordings. And
oh, interesting.
Mountain Goats here and there. And anyways, he has a really cool space. Like, it's just like he has a house that he lives in, and then somewhere else in town he has a house that is just full-time studio. Like, nobody lives there. It's just a small house. Pretty sweet. This was probably like 2015 or something. I have no idea if he's still in that space at this point, but right downtown, kind of near what's that venue, Motorco?
Oh yeah. How the fuck do I kind of can't believe it. I probably do know this person, and I'm
if you've just met him, I think you'd remember him because he is quite a character. He is got a million stories and just pretty eccentric, but pretty fun guy. And he definitely feels like a fun energy in how he goes about recording. Like, he definitely brought a lot of the ideas that he would kind of throw into the mix. I felt always like kept us on our toes creatively, like just weird stuff. Like, one time recording an acoustic guitar, he was like, man, I feel like that you need something not your fingers and not a pick. And he found like a Dremel brush and had me play with that. And I was like, that is no producer has ever asked me to do something like that. But in the most subtle way, it has like this different attack on the guitar than you would ever get with a regular pick or your fingers. And it, I mean, I'm assuming no one who's ever heard that song has ever thought, man, that Dremel brush sounds great. But I know it was a Dremel brush, and it's pretty cool.
Damn. Interesting.
He also kind of, one memorable piece of advice I remember him saying, like, if you're recording and you like forget to lay down a part on one instrument or whatever it might be, he always suggests instead of like, say you were like playing a guitar part and you forgot one little flourish, he's like, instead of trying to sub or redo the whole part, just record that part on a different instrument, like use it as an excuse to bring in a piano to do that one line instead. And so there's a moment on the record where like I just blanked and forgot to play this little flourish, so I just came back in and did it as like a little octave thing on piano, and it sounds way cooler than if I had just been another guitar lick, you know.
I like that a lot. We actually ended up doing that a lot on the Jenny record, not so much because of that, but because we just ended up layering so many things that we like tried so many melodies on different, like we did everything from like the Juno to just an Ableton sounds to guitars to bass. We would just throw all kinds of stuff. And sometimes it's all like, there's a bunch of layers of certain things in there. Sometimes it's just one of them.
Dude, I bet you Jenny could go deep on some keyboard nerddom. Do you guys have like an old Juno or like one of the more modern ones?
We got an old one. I've got a 106 that actually, that we put a lot of that stuff on. Then a lot of it is just, some of the stuff are keyboards that like Thomas bought and we use on the record, and then now we're long sold and we were like trying to remember exactly what's what because we didn't take like great notes.
Yeah, it can get tricky if you're using multiple keyboards just to remember which one was which for which part. Tough,
yeah. But a lot of it is also just Ableton sounds. John demos everything in Ableton, so sometimes he'll find a real good sound in there and we'll just use it, go from there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of newer to that side of like I guess like soft synths or whatever, but did a little bit of that on some recording recently, and it is kind of fun. It's like a whole new world. But what are y'all using for keys live? What was that keyboard you were touring with?
Actually, that is Dylan's using Ableton, and we took one of the things that we use a lot of is the DX7 on the record, actually. Mm-hmm. And we took the DX7 and the Juno 106, and we sampled like 20 keyboards, like every key. We just did like a full sample of the keyboard, and then we built the sample things into Ableton for the Juno and the DX7 and the Ableton sounds. And basically Dylan can play every single keyboard through the computer on MIDI.
So live he is like setting up a computer with it.
Yeah, he sets up a little laptop and he's got all like the sounds and everything else.
That's cool. Yeah, it means, especially if you're, like you were saying before, kind of like sometimes guessing as to what keyboard was what, you can just like set it up per song, what sound you want, not have to like, you know, hurt your brain trying to remember.
Yeah. I mean, luckily a lot of the most important ones we were definitely dialed in on, but sometimes it's the ones on like the real synth heavy songs where it's like the bass sound is like something and I'm like, I have no fucking clue what that
yeah. is like. But you know, that's part of the fun, kind of relearning certain aspects of it. Man, your bass rig, not to just make this podcast like all gear nerddom, which I could very well do, but dude, your bass was sounding so good the other night. Like the combo of the actual bass and not even that small rig is like, sounds huge.
I love that. Yeah, that was, I kind of got that out of like necessity of trying to fit all our shit into the minivan.
Yeah.
And now I like can't not use it. Although I will say that head sounds really good on big cabs too. Like I've played with bands where like we get to use their like huge like refrigerator cab thing.
You just throw your head on it.
Yeah, and it sounds amazing.
What kind of head cab combo is that?
I use the Trainer TS50B, which is like the same one that like Bob Weston popularized in Shellac. And like, okay. I think maybe like either Fugazi or Jesus, there's like some of those DC bands maybe used it too.
I could hear use that.
It for kind of like the more metallic, like grindy bass sound. Right. And then I just kind of turned that down a little bit, but it's still there for sure. And then try to make it a little bit between that and a normal bass.
Yeah, I think yours is definitely a little bit more like rounded out with a low end than something like Shellac or even, I don't know, I guess Fugazi, like Joe, who played bass in that band, he's kind of right. I think he's maybe you're right with that comparison. Like he's still got a little bit of that metallic bite, but like definitely pretty thick low end to it.
I also I started using tape wound strings on my bass too, because it was like I felt like I was going through strings real constant, and that was like the one thing where I can like add extra like high end and attack on that amp because it's so bright, and then use those strings and it kind of like lands right in the middle.
Nice. So I know you played in a million bands. I don't want to make you like, you know, go too far back, but like, are your active projects right now, aside from the new country-ish project and Jenny B, is there anything else that you're like actively participating in musically?
There's one other, Summer of Snakes, that I'm playing in.
Ah, yes.
With the Zach Mexico dudes. Actually, it's me and John from Jenny, plus...
I did not know John played in that.
He plays bass and I play guitar. We trade.
Cool.
And he's actually probably a much better... He definitely is a much better bass player than... John's first instrument was bass, so he can kind of do all the goofy bass shit that I can't do, that you have to, like, grow up doing to, like, learn it. But, I play guitar in that. He plays bass. Then Matt, who plays guitar in Zach Mexico, it's his thing with he sings and plays guitar. He's an amazing guitar player.
Yeah, incredible.
And then John, that sings in Zach Mexico, plays keys. And Marty is on drums, who's also in Zach Mexico.
Nice. Yeah, I was so bummed that couldn't catch you guys when you were in town. I mean, it was fun being down there. I will say, you know, I'm a big Against Me fan from
that sounded good.
My younger days and present, so that was fun to be playing with Laura Jane. But man, that was such a stacked bill. I would have loved to have been in town to see you guys. It was you guys, Numb Tongue, Secret Guest, was that the lineup?
That's right.
Yeah that's powerhouse, to say the least. John from Zach Mexico has been drumming with somebody, right? Was he drumming with Lonnie?
He's been out with Lonnie, playing drums. He's just filling in for Ray, who couldn't make this little run. Okay. But they were opening up for Future Islands on like 2 or 3 weeks, and he jumped in on drums. He's a pretty good drummer.
Did not even know he was a drummer until I saw him posting these. I mean, I'm not surprised, because he's sort of like one of those guys who's just like an amazing skateboarder, amazing singer. Yeah. Like, you know, can't really find something that he's not good at, you know?
Yeah.
But that's cool, man. That seems like a good fit, and definitely, like, you know, I'm sure that those shows are absolutely killer.
I'm going to go see them tonight, actually.
Is mostly East Coast dates?
Yeah, I think this might be the last one, actually. I'm driving up to Richmond to go see Future Islands and Lonnie Walker at the National.
It's a long drive, man. Well, I don't know. It's not as far from you. It's pretty like far from Columbia.
It's like two hours, 15 minutes, maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad. But it's like, you know, 5 to 6 probably from us.
Yeah.
You guys are like 3 from here.
Yeah.
So that adds up. Yeah, sometimes we've done that... you know, a handful of times to just see a show. And I'm like, man, you got to really want to see a show to go to Richmond from Columbia, which that is certainly the type of show that would be worth it for sure. Richmond's cool, man. Like, just like a town that I like to have downtime in for sure.
Yeah, I like it. It's gotten better over the years, I feel like.
Yeah. Are you going to try to hang out a little bit, you know, spend some time in town? Or are you coming straight back?
We're hanging out till tomorrow. No, yeah, we're not really able to chill. I've got like, I also helped work this festival for the Eno River in Durham like a week ago. And then we did those shows out of town. And so I'm kind of like backed up on like real life work for like hopscotch stuff and everything else.
Plenty of catch up to do on your end. What's going on with the bookstore and record store right now? Are you still like, able to put in a lot of time there, or has it gotten to the point where it kind of runs itself?
I was a late add to that ownership group. Like Enoch and Brian, the two guys, they bought it in like 2010, I want to say. And then I've known them since we were young, so maybe elementary school. It's been a long time. And so over COVID, like I've been a part of that for like 3 years now, maybe 2 years, 3, 4. And I was working there a lot when all the live stuff was at a dead stop. I was just doing all kinds of stuff there. And now everything's gotten kind of crazy again. So I really have been working like one day a week there, and then helping out where I can on like design stuff and t-shirts and things like that, like things I can do from home and cleaning records. But I'd like to get in there more. It's my favorite thing to do, but it's also the hardest one to plan for in some ways.
That's funny, man. I just assumed that you were like, you know, one of the founders because of the name alone.
No, actually that store has been around since like maybe the late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's I just assumed it was a play on Nathan Price, Nice Price. Like, I don't know why.
I think that the guy that started at Barry, he had a place in Chapel Hill, Durham, and Raleigh. Enoch worked there when we were kids. Like, I remember him working there in high school and stuff.
That's crazy,
man. And like the one in Chapel Hill, like there's one like Sonic Youth live record where they're like at the Cradle and they're like, sorry, we're late. We were at Nice Price getting some stuff. So, like, it's been around for like a long ass time.
That's so wild.
When Barry retired, he kind of like asked all the employees at all the stores if anybody like, hey, do y'all want to, should I sell this stuff out or y'all want to try to buy it? And they were working there at the time, bought it for a real reasonable price. And then have had it for that long. And then I got involved a couple years ago and yeah, it's been awesome. I love that. Love a record store.
Yeah. Yeah. There's you know, I feel like for any touring bands coming through the Southeast, like if you're in North Carolina, that's a spot to hit. You know, if you're in Charlotte, Lunchbox is probably the move, right?
Yeah. I mean, Sorry State and Nice Price are the two I'd say are definitely worth checking out in Raleigh.
Yep. Yeah. Southeast is like slept on in regards to that sometimes. There's a lot of really good record stores. Like, I mean, of course, got to give Papa Jazz its love. I feel like that's worth its salt at the very least here in Columbia. So the podcast that you do, that I know you said that you kind of are less consistently putting it out these days, but like, is it, what's the format like on, I know it's adjacent to the bookstore and record store, but
yeah. We basically, it's the Nice Price podcast and we basically, you know, we'll just kind of shoot the shit for like 10 or 15 minutes and then talk. Usually we talk some new records that have just come out. So, it's pretty, flexible format. And sometimes we have guests on, sometimes we don't. And during the pandemic, we were doing them weekly because, you know, everybody was hanging around. And then, now it's gotten a little bit harder to find time. Matt that is on there with us, he actually moved to Richmond. He's living in Richmond now, so we kind of have opposite schedules and we can't like get together in like the bookstore and just sit there and like drink Miller Lights and do the podcast. We have to like set up time for a Zoom and shit, so
yeah,
you know.
Well, that's cool. I'll definitely spend some time with that, man. I feel like I finally not that you have to have streaming to experience new music, but in the year 2023, I finally sucked it up and paid for music streaming, which is kind of wild to have the world of music at your fingertips. Keep telling friends that, and they're like, "Yeah, we've been doing that for a while." Like, yeah, but imagine if you hadn't. It's a crazy concept. Like the other day, I was like, "Man, you know what? I'll just think about a random band that I never really dived into. I'm like, I don't got to go buy 10 records. I can just go listen. It's crazy."
Yeah, it's not bad.
But that being said, nothing beats going into a proper record store and having to crate dive a little bit.
I know. I feel it like is fun.
The added work going into that discovery, it's just like a more like focused experience and not like, you know, I can just casually listen to something now because of this streaming phenomenon, but you know, you're not nothing casual about going and physically buying a record and coming home and throwing it on a turntable, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I love going to record stores out of town. Like I would stop by, I don't know if we actually stopped in Poppin' Jack, but I normally stop in to some places in Columbia, Drip, and then some other spots too. Mm-hmm. And then, but I sometimes feel like I end up buying more records, not from the store, because I feel like I'm like taking from our customers when I'm like buying from the shop in a weird way. Like it has to really sit out there for like a month before I feel comfortable like taking home something that came in that's real cool. So sometimes when I'm gone and other places, I'll end up really going crazy.
Well, that's noble of you, trying to let the customers get the goods first.
I mean, there's definitely some that when they come in, I'm like, this ain't fucking on the floor.
I was about to say, there's a lot of record store employees I know who would absolutely snag something cool before yeah. anybody else. Nothing wrong with that either. You know, that's part of the perks of the gig, you know?
I've also part of it's just, I unfortunately just have so many records now. It's just like, it's just gotten crazy. So
it can get nuts, dude. That's one reason why I've like enjoyed kind of shifting. The only thing that I can listen to music on in my vehicle is cassette. I have like a 98 Tacoma. Oh, nice. So I end up buying a lot of tapes just because it's convenient to listen to in the car. And I'm just like very anti-clutter as a person. And not that I want to say records are clutter, because obviously there's like a lot of value to that. But
in terms of space.
Exactly. In terms of real estate, a few hundred records takes up a lot of space, you know, like, and that's a small record collection by most people's standards, you know?
I mean, I have so much. I have like a lot of tapes too. I have a ton of cassettes.
If you had to ballpark it, how many records and tapes do you have at home?
I mean, my records aren't as crazy as some people that are in the shop, so it's not like wild. I probably have like 2,000 or like 2,500 records. Not like it's a reasonable amount, I think.
Record store employee standards, I think that is very reasonable.
And then for cassettes, I mean, I probably have like 800 cassettes. I have like a lot of cassettes because I started collecting cassettes in like 2007 or something like that. And I would just sometimes find a lot of stuff on cassette that you couldn't find. Like, I feel like kids are doing that now with CDs, where they'll find like all these CDs for like a dollar. Like, it was sort of the same thing with like cassettes back then. And I was just buying up. Like, somebody would sell their whole thing and there'd be like 7 Dinosaur Jr. cassettes, and you just buy them all for like $8 or something like that. And now it's kind of come back around and gotten expensive, but you know, I still have them all and I listen to them a lot. Sometimes I listen to more cassettes than records because you can just throw it on and they'll just play.
Well, I definitely remember the era of tapes being crazy inexpensive. Like when I was a kid in the 90s, you could go to like a Walmart, buy a still shrink wrapped In Utero for like 99 cents, because they were like out of fashion, but they still had them in stock. And now I looked on Discogs the other day, and someone who was sold a cassette of In Utero with no J card, no box, just the tape for like $50.
That's crazy.
In the world of expensive hard copies, that's not that expensive, but for a no artwork, no tape box, like it's kind of like a bare minimum copy of In Utero.
I mean, but Nirvana is just insane. I've got the one copy, maybe the most expensive thing I have is a first press Bleach.
Whoa.
Where I got it like a long time ago. The record, the cover is just blasted. Like the cover looks like total shit.
And but the record vinyl, is right? Not tape for
vinyl,
that.
Vinyl,
right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the record isn't good. And I think it's worth like hundreds of dollars, maybe.
Oh, I can't even imagine what that would be worth.
And if I ever found a version that was just the cover, I would probably buy it for like $50 or something.
Yeah, dude, I wonder how many they even pressed of the first run of Bleach. Because at that point, I guess they were still kind of on the up and up then, but
it was Sub Pop. It's not like Sub Pop was nothing, and they
by no means.
Records were like the like that's probably what they made the most of. They weren't making a ton of CDs yet. I don't know. It's hard to say. There's probably somebody knows somewhere. Probably on Discogs.
I'm trying to even think. Is Bleach is that like 89 or is that like
it's 80s? Yeah, I think it is 89.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah, hold on to that, dude. That's only going to go up in value. That's the type of thing that I don't see you selling, though. I feel like you're going to probably have that your whole life.
Yeah, probably. Unfortunately.
Yeah. That's like the type of thing you sell if shit gets real in life and you got to start selling stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That probably would be one I sold actually pretty quick, because I could probably just get a reissue for $20.
Well, yeah. In terms of the listening experience, it wouldn't change much. But yeah, in terms of the story, it would definitely be different. But, well, man, there's so much that I kind of want to pick your brain about. I guess one thing that I'm sort of definitely very curious about is just like, you know, broad strokes, what the ins and outs of trying to be one of the major coordinators behind something like Hopscotch is. What year is the festival in now? I know it's a little blurry with COVID, kind of.
The 13th.
Wow, 13 years. That's crazy, man. Have you been involved hands-on on the planning side for the majority of it, or when did you come into the fold?
I did day shows for the first couple of years, and then in 2014, that was the first year I did the booking for it, and then I've booked most of it every year since.
Nice.
Then I became like the director in like 2016 or something like that. So I've been,
I think it's in good hands, man. So I mean, is it like, are you already like, when does the planning really start to, when are you digging your heels into the next year? Like, are you already in the process of planning 24, or is
I've done some 24 stuff already, which is the first time that it has ever been this early, I will
That's
say.
That's awesome, man. That means you're on your A game.
It's gotten like, well, it's more just like the agents just like will not leave you alone. They're like, hey, if you want this band, you have to tell us now because we're routing for like that part of the year. So you're like, if I've told somebody that like that we've worked with since like for a long time that we're interested in a band for next year and to let us know, then they'll like reach out. And so that's kind of what's happened. And now we're working on a couple things for next year to kind of keep it going, because we want to make sure that it's sustainable. And one of the ways to make it sustainable is to, you know, keep getting big bands. So,
yeah. Well, you certainly knocked it out of the park this year, man. Like of course I had a little bit of intel about, you know, obviously our set and Sloppy Boys and Numb Tongue, but everything else was like morning of when the email went out with the flyer. And I remember texting Cam and the rest of Dear Blanca and being like, this is, so I don't even remember what I said. I think I just was like, Pavement and Dino Jr., man. And he was like, no fucking way. I was like, yeah, man. We had just on the last tour we did, we were doing a Dino cover. So that was like very on our brains. So.
Yeah.
And it has been so fun for me diving into like, cause I've had friends who have been huge Pavement fans since we were kids. And they're the type of band that like, I always, from the first time I heard them, I knew that there was potential for me to become a big fan, but I like drug my feet on it forever because it was almost like I knew it was going to be a whole thing where I became a fan. So like, I was like waiting for the right time. And basically the tour announced the Hopscotch announcement, I was like, I'm doing it, man. And I think that was a big part of why I started paying for streaming. I was like, I'm tired of having to search for fucking full album YouTube videos.
And they have all their like expanded editions on streaming too, which some of those are as good as anything.
100%. And not to sound like the like last guy to show up at a party that started in the 90s, but Pavement is a fucking awesome band. I'm a huge fan now. Like, I was like, I don't know what took me so damn long, but part of me was feeling guilty. Like, man, I shouldn't have waited this long. But then I was like, I don't know. Everybody I know loves this band. I bet you they'd be excited to be able to say they're hearing it for the first time now. Like, I'd heard songs. Like, I knew Shady Lane, Range Life, like some songs that are just like very present in the ether, but like, and knew that those songs were great and made me want to listen to more, but I did not know albums. I didn't know. I mean, when I started diving into the albums, I was like, yeah, I really like almost all of this is new to me. And it's so, I understand Secret Guest in a completely different way now. Like, I was like, Brett Nash just makes, I've always loved Brett Nash and he made sense to me, but now he makes perfect sense to me. Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, dude, you're a child of the Pavement era, no doubt, you know?
And you can like listen to the Silver Juice stuff a little differently afterwards. You can hear like all the Malcolmus parts in those records.
Yeah, it's heavy, 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 but that Purple Mountains record, I listened to that and was like, this is just like, first time I've heard something and instantly wanted to sit down and try to write a song. Like, it's just so fucking good, man. Like that, and of course, like context, everything makes it like a very heavy listen, but God, lyrics like that, The Light of My Life Is Going Out Tonight With Someone She Just Met. I'm like, that's so clever. so sad, but so good. It's like one of those lines you're like, damn, I can't believe he wrote that already. I wish I could write that line. You know?
And he's the one that named like Slanted and Enchanted. Like,
oh, really? Berman, I didn't know that.
Him and Malcolmist were like roommates, and Stanovich were like roommates in like the early 90s in New York. And I guess that he had like written that on their refrigerator or something like that. That's what I've like seen. And then
Steve, I mean, I know that used that. He was definitely a big influence on just like early creative energy in general, just because he was sort of like a like-minded dude. But
yeah,
such a fun band, man. I'm really, really excited to see them play at the festival. Like, it's the first time I've had a new band that I've like kind of been head over heels for in a minute. I was like, this is just like very inspiring music.
No, that makes sense. I think that they're kind of like maybe Wire, The Fall in the 80s, or like The Kinks or something like that, where like you can kind of like them for a long time and like know a couple songs without like diving in, but then once you dive in, you're kind of like, oh shit, all this is good.
Yeah, The Kinks is a great comparison, because you know, you might, everybody and their brother is like, yeah, you really got me, great song, you know. No doubt. But then you take that same person and you give them Arthur,
yeah,
and say, listen to this start to finish, and you're like, this is a completely different band than I ever realized. Like, way less radio. I mean, the Kinks, like, I guess they're always like pretty, you know, consistently like catchy and whatnot, but those albums are way beyond like radio garage pop.
Yeah, they're so good.
I mean, I had a friend in high school. He was Dear Blanca's drummer for like forever, and we played in bands in high school before he moved to he lives in, I guess, in Boulder now, but he turned me on to those Kinks records in high school. Like, God, what are the big ones that are like so awesome? Arthur,
Lola,
it's a great one. Village Green, holy crap.
They don't have many stinkers, honestly.
Muswell Hillbillies is a great one. I think that Something Else is a great one. I think some of those like late 80s ones get a little dicey for me.
They all have at least like one or two good songs.
Really?
I mean,
for sure. Yeah. Like, usually the single at least is like noteworthy. What's the one that's got like the most absurd album cover, like School Boys in Disgrace or whatever it's called?
I can't. That one's a staple of the dollar bin.
You know? Oh, 100%. That is one you will have no problem scoring a copy of. But you'll see some pretty good copies of all those like classic ones coming through too. I think Kinks are just like one of the, didn't they get kind of like a raw deal because they weren't able to like, they kind of got, were they banned from touring in the U.S. or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah, there's something where like maybe they were kind of like, I want to say they were almost like on like the nostalgia tour, like even before maybe like Lola came out. Like, they kind of had like people were like writing them off as like done even before they were through like some of their most prolific output. So I don't know why that was. I you look back in like retrospect and you're like, man, all this shit rips so hard. But I guess when you're listening to it at the time, it maybe just sounded derivative or something like that, but it's stuck. It's like lasted longer than some of the stuff that people 100%. Thought was better.
Well, I want to say that I read, or I don't know, a podcast or something that said there was some sort of situation, and I could be getting these facts wrong, but I think that the story was like Kinks had this like early on, like I think like You Really Got Me era had like a huge US tour booked, and then whoever the tour manager was just completely dropped the ball and screwed up all this stuff, and either they fired him or something happened and he was not involved with the actual physical tour, and like a lot of the bridges that guy burned caused like venues to be upset with the band because they were like managing themselves at that point, and it just kind of made it where like I think there was like a fight or something between one of the Davies brothers.
They were like definitely promoter. Like the early, like Liam and Noel, like they fought constantly.
Well, I think they were fighting promoters, and because of like the bad blood that this tour manager guy had started, and they were just trying to like salvage a tour. Anyways, I think something happened. One of the promoters that they were at odds with had like big connections in terms of national touring, and it just kind of like softly blacklisted them from touring in the States, or I'm sure that I'm butchering that story, but it's something like that.
I've heard something similar. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is just a crazy thing to think about. Like, cause, you know, I mean, they were just getting started when you really got me and all that, like that. That's like to me that that's like the early Stones records that are just like cover records.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's their era of that. Like they hadn't really, like, I don't think if you really got me as like the Kinks sound, you know, like,
yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. They're Stones is a good comparison because they really got good in the '70s. I feel like Kinks really like hit their stride.
Yeah.
Like later on.
But who knows, man? They're still, you know, the brothers are still around. Maybe they and Oasis will tour together one day at the Stars.
That'd be crazy. That'd be insane.
It's another band that I really don't know shit about, man. Oasis is like, aside from the hits, I really don't know much about them. I know that people love them to death, but
they've got a couple good records. And then, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. There's so much good stuff. You're like, where do I spend my time? But I do think that they have a couple record, their first record, second record, pretty good.
We'll have to dive in, man. I mean, I know the jams that everybody knows, but I definitely don't know albums by them. And some people talk about them like it's the greatest thing that ever happened to music. I feel like that's hard for me to believe, but you know, I'm sure that there is a lot of gold in there. People are still talking about it this long after like the handful of records they made, you know?
Yeah.
Well, man, so where are you at with the festival right now? Like what on a daily level, like when you're clocking in, what's taking up the majority of your time in terms of planning at this point?
Just like ordering tents and bathrooms and nothing fun.
So they got you on, you're doing all sorts barricade. Of stuff. If you're booking and doing like,
oh yeah. Well, it's a small festival. So it's like one of the most, not one of the last, but it's one of the only independent, true independents in the nation. There's like no AEG or Live Nation stuff. So it's a pretty small team, really. We all kind of do a lot of stuff. And because of that, you end up doing all kinds of, you kind of touch every single little bit of it. But it's a lot of working with the city of Raleigh, making sure that all of our orders are correct and ready, and then, you know, advancing bands soon. And we also have a second wave of artists that are coming out pretty soon. Cool. That not big, mostly smaller stuff, but there's some cool, there's definitely some cool stuff in there. And, you know, trying to make sure like we have some cool t-shirt designs and like making sure set times are right, making sure all the backline stuff. So, you know, it's just like every little thing.
Well, I mean, like a festival's an overwhelming amount of planning to begin with, but this style of festival being that it's, you know, you've got your main stage, and then all sorts of club shows going on, and just the sheer quantity of bands that you and your co-workers with the festival have to like, that's a big puzzle to put together, to figure out how to put like, what is it, like 90 bands or something? Like
it's over 100, I think, actually.
I'm flabbergasted that it's even
it's a lot.
You seem very calm and collected for the task that you have.
Yeah, it doesn't stress me out in the same way that it stresses out some people, for whatever reason.
It's probably why you got the job, man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I do feel like it's a lot, but we have some good people helping. We have Zach Reeder at Snug Harbor. He's helping us here. And he's booked a lot of the club shows, actually, and he's been really awesome. We've always been kind of hoping for somebody like that, but it's hard to find in the triangle because everybody's in 20 bands that are playing day shows and everything else. So it's hard to find somebody that can kind of come in and help and do what he's been doing. But him being kind of triangle adjacent in Charlotte, but still knowing North Carolina bands and everything really well, has been kind of the perfect fit to help with some of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I will say I was like slightly surprised considering the new Jenny Bassett's record is freshly out that you weren't on the bill, but I guess it's logical that like, how could you possibly worry about playing a set on top of everything else? You
know? We might do a Summer of Snakes set on Sunday. Cool. But it's like, I used to book myself sometimes, cause it was kind of like it was like booking a show on your birthday or something like that.
Like, well, it's also like when there's that many bands, it's not like you don't really run the risk of like feeling like, first off, you guys, if you weren't the booking person for Hopscotch, I think Jenny Bissett's would be an obvious fit regardless of the connection. But when it's a festival that has, like you said, over 100 bands, I don't think you have to worry about like nepotism being a concern, because it's like there's a lot of room for bands on the bill. It's not like, you know, if you headlined it, it would be like, maybe you could throw that word out.
But the one time we played, I was in a band that played the main stage with Breeders and Spiritualized, and that was the year right before I started booking it. So I feel,
what band was that?
That was the Lollipops. It was like a small band that I was in.
Okay.
That was kind of like, we toured a little bit, but I was in a band maybe in like 2016 or something like that. I think it was Lilac Shadows. I actually don't remember what band it was. Yeah, it was Lilac. And then it was, we had booked a show. Sometimes you feel bad because everybody else in the band, like every other band in the triangle, gets to play it at some point. But if I'm in the band, then it's like too much. So I was like, all right, we'll play. And then something happened. I think that might have been the year that Erykah Badu's plane was late. I don't remember what it was, but there was something going on where I was like seriously tied up, and I just missed the whole set, and they had to play without me. And then ever since then, I've just felt like it's maybe not, I don't know. I just feel like if I was, especially in a band that I play bass in, I played guitar in that band. So if I wasn't there, it was like not great, but it wasn't like so weird. If it's a band that I play bass in, then it's kind of, you kind of got to have that in there, especially if it's like a post-punky thing where like bass has like lead and stuff.
Well, I mean, you're just probably unavoidably like have to run around all over the place. It's like, do you get, even as like, are there moments where you can like take a breather and actually like watch some music, or do you feel like you're barely able to do that?
It's not, I used to be able to. Sometimes when we had the opera house, we're not going to have that this year, I would go and kind of hide out in the back corner of the opera house and with my laptop and kind of like watch some of those in like the AC when it was kind of quiet and like do some work. But it's definitely, it's hard to make time to have fun and enjoy some of these things sometimes.
Have y'all ever thought about, and you know, you might be way ahead of me on this, but like just doing some like board recordings of some of the festival performances? Like,
I think we're going to do some of that this year, actually.
Nice.
With WUNC, the local station, is going to like do some streaming stuff from the main stages, and that'll be on WUNC Music. And we've done some of that before. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. I'm not going to say for who, but I've definitely like stuck a USB into the board and been like, make sure you get this for me.
For
like,
posterity, or for your own private collection, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, I regardless of if you published it in any way, because that's its own can of worms dealing with whether the bands are into it or whatever. But, you know, just bootlegging that shit so you could listen to it at home yourself. Like, that's because you're not going to, like you said, you can't really hardly listen to the show in person. So if you could like go home and listen to the set, that'd be nice, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've got some cool stuff.
I'm sure you could get a lot of really good footage too, which I'm sure you've already thought of as well.
Yeah, but. And there's a blog that does a pretty good job most years called NYC Taper. They normally come down and record a lot of stuff, so you can find a lot of the old Hopscotch stuff through that too.
Nice. Well, I'm definitely going to check it out. We're coming up, I mean, you know, we're playing Saturday, but I think we're going to come up, hang for the whole thing, man. Like, so hopefully we'll be able to, I know you'll be busy, but hopefully I'll be able to see you around and say, hey, at least.
Yeah, maybe. You never know. I mean, if everything goes according to plan, then theoretically I don't have that much to do because I'm just kind of like bouncing around a little bit, but it never works out that way.
Well, I mean, you definitely should feel proud, man. Like, both of the Jenny Bissett's record is like incredible. And this lineup, like, I mean, everybody's talking about how do you guys not, I mean, you guys do it every year. There's never been a flub year, but like this year feels.
People are into it. It's like we were selling more tickets.
Very impressive.
I'm also like, now I'm like, who the fuck are we going to get next year? Like, it's, doing too well this year.
The beauty of that is, man, each time you have one of these killer lineups, which, like you said, 13 years of it, it just means an easier sell next year when you're trying to book and be like, look, this is what we had. Like, this lineup that you have now is going to make people want to be a part, even more so want to be a part of next year, not meaning like whatever big ticket bands that you're reaching out to. I mean, you know all this, but like the success like of something like this kind of like just paves the way for future inroads in terms of like good gets.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see what y'all do with it, man. And I can't believe it's been, you said 13 years, right?
This will be the third. Yeah.
That's crazy. It does not feel like that much time has been going on with Hopscotch. That's crazy. But
it started in 2010 and then we lost 1 year for 2020. So it would be, it's been going for a long time. I mean, it's been going since like agents had like AOL email addresses and stuff like that. Now it's like all super official.
Well, I won't put this person on blast, but somebody in my life uses bellsouth.net as their email, and I cannot help but clown on them.
I've got a friend that still uses Mindspring.
Wow. Oh, no, I do too. Mike Watt, who, you know, we've communicated with a ton, he's buddied up with over the years. He's a Mindspring guy. He's the only person I've ever known to have a Mindspring.
I'll tell this guy that Mike Watt uses it too.
It'll make him feel better about it. I guess we can't clown on him. It's been Mike's officially made Mindspring cool.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, dude, thanks for chatting, man. And I can't thank you enough for coming down and playing at the Bike Collective the other night. And I'm definitely going to be throwing Jenny Bissett's track into this episode. And I think people are going to really dig it. And I wanted to, I think I might already hit you up about it, but I'd love to try to find some live recordings of Jenny B to put on this Comfort Monk comp, if it makes sense.
We actually don't, I don't think we have any. We were looking for some, and we might try to record something. When are you getting that out by?
It's funny, man. Like every time I do like a deadline, I'm like, people are always like, oh, dude, I'm sorry, I missed the deadline. Like, you know, that deadline's like barely real, right? Yeah. Like, nothing happens in a that's just like to get people trying to get their ducks in a row, really, is the goal. But very, very loose. I mean, technically we were shooting for like the beginning of July, but I didn't factor in like that we were going to be so knee deep in finishing up that record that we just did and all that. So like I'm behind myself majorly on it. Have a lot of really awesome song contributions already, like Mike Watson in this mid-2000s live recording of him in a van doing a Rocky Erickson song, which is pretty cool. And probably got like close to 10 really awesome songs for it so far. But I feel like in compilation track lists, I think like they work a little best to be in the like teens to like early 20s in song lengths for me, or at least that's my goal.
Totally.
So anyways, I got a lot more songs that I'm trying to gather. So I guess I don't have a definitive answer for that, but I would be more than happy to push this project until we can find a Jenny Bissett song, because you guys would be such a cool addition. No pressure, but
I'll try to figure it out.
We're willing to work with you on that for sure.
I definitely feel like we've recorded shows before. None of us could find anything. I was like, where the fuck is this shit at? But
Well, if something pops up, we'll make it happen. And if not, maybe it'll inspire us to make a second live comp or something, you know?
That's right, yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, I guess I'll see you in September, hopefully, if you're free enough to sit and
have a
beer or something. But thanks for everything, man. And I'm looking forward to Hopscotch, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Well, have a good one, Nathan. I'll see you soon.
You too. All right.
Bye.